In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Your genotype is really all your DNA code, and that's fantastic, but your body has the choice as to which code it's going to switch on or express or activate.
The power of your phenotype is that everything changes all the time. We're a very dynamic being, and as you change, then the things that you should be eating change.
It's just one of those things that we don't often consider, but even our neurochemistry changes, you know, as our food changes and our requirements change in just a different environmental stimulus, which is pretty powerful when you can realize that and harness that.
And that's really the key here is that, you know, which genes are actually activated for you right now will determine who you are right now. The genes that are there actually may not be relevant at all if they're not switched on.
So there's always in the elite sport things that we do that aren't good for our health. What PHU60 will tell you is what's best for your health. And so you then have the power to adapt your training regime around that, but you'll always know what's best.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. We provide you with everything you need to know for total performance, fat loss, recovery, digestion, sleep, brain, and hormone optimization. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you just want to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield here, and a few weeks ago I actually got an email from a podcast listener who said I had to get this guy named Matt Ryman on the show, and I had never heard of Matt, so as I'm prone to do quite often, I had a brief Skype video conversation to vet Matt and see if he'd be an informative guest for the show, or as sometimes happens when some random person solicits a guest to me, a charlatan. But it turns out that Matt is actually the former. Turned out to be a very informative guy. Within the first 5 minutes of us chatting on Skype, he was telling me by my manner of speech and my facial expressions what my cognitive dominance and dominant frequency brainwaves were. And don't worry, we'll delve into what that means in today's show. He also told me that a high-protein breakfast is really not the right thing for many people and could, in fact, be harmful for some people. And then he launched into some of his interesting thoughts on genetic testing to determine the best exercise plan or the best nutrition plan. So a lot of really interesting stuff and real wealth of knowledge. So I figured we should probably have him on the show. So who is Matt Ryman? Well, he describes himself as a social entrepreneur in the fields of personalized health and future medicine, specifically focused on, and I think this is a little bit of a cop-out, but whatever, changing the entire health trajectory of the human race. So kind of small beans there, Matt. I think you should probably have higher aspirations than changing the entire health trajectory of the human race. Just throwing that out there. I'm joking.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, no problem. So Matt has a master's degree in applied human sciences. He's a lecturer and a clinical educator over in Australia, which you may have already guessed from the brief exposure you just had to his accent. And in 2013, he founded the Ultimate Human Foundation, which is a nonprofit with the mission to transform world health and to eliminate chronic pain and disease from the planet. He's founded 7 businesses in health and medicine over the past 10 years. So kind of a serial entrepreneur, it sounds like, and most recently launched PH360.me, and that is a smart health app based on personalized epigenetics and gene expression. Matt, you sound like an underachiever, man.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to be on the show and have a conversation with you about all things health.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got some pretty big sights and a very big mission we're working on, so we're pretty excited. We don't have too many boring days, that's for sure.
That's sweet. Well, I have a ton of questions for you about epigenetics and this whole high protein diet thing and what you're up to. But I also wanted to just ask you about this thing that happened when we were first Skyping, when we were video Skyping a few weeks ago. You looked at me and you listened to me talk and you started talking about my cognitive dominance and dominant frequency brainwaves. And I'm just curious what that is. Can you explain what you were doing there?
Sure. So to consider health to be very accurate, we need to consider all the different existing sciences and medicine that are available today in Eastern and Western. And so if you take a lot of the principles or concepts from Ayurveda, from Chinese medicine, you're really able to look at our physical features that reflect our internal health. When you overlay those with, you know, the ancient sciences of things like anthropometry, which was really popularized in the 1600s, that it's a scientific measurement of our body and its specific ratio.
Yeah, it's like body typing, right?
Exactly. And this is how we actually naturally work without even knowing it. You know, if I look at you, or if I look at a friend or a family member, automatically this concept that Apple has of facial recognition, that's who we are. We recognize our friends and families by specific, you know, width of someone's cheekbone or distance between their lip or nose. All these physical ratios that exist is how we identify people and other objects. And so, you know, anthropometry is something that's it gives us a lot of information. Actually, there's a lot of research that's been done over the last hundreds of years that link you know, our body shape to risks of disease, link it to our physiology, even the function of our, you know, our body and our brain. If you overlay even further with you know, knowledge in endocrinology, which is like the scientific study of how our hormones influence our function, our behaviors, our emotions, and disease as well, you know, we really start to get a much clearer pattern of who we've got. And if you overlay that with neuroscience to help us understand which regions of the brain are most responsible for different tasks, how they communicate.
That's really interesting. So if you take and I've got a few books on Ayurvedic body typing. I find it fascinating. I delved into it a little bit when I was writing kind of a basic version of that. I wrote this, I don't know if you know this, I wrote this thing called The Get Fit Guy's Guide to Achieving Your Ideal Body Type. And it was just a book that with a questionnaire in it that lets you determine whether you're like an ectomorph or a mesomorph or an endomorph, you know, like that, the classic apple pear stick ruler. Fantastic. Type of shapes, and then, you know, generate like an exercise and nutrition plan based on that. Really basic, but just basically a really good way for people who want something based on their body type to inform them for nutrition and exercise. But it sounds to me like you've delved a lot more deeply into this. Like when we were talking, you were talking about brainwaves. What exactly were you going after there? I mean, looking at me, whatever, I'm kind of like a skinny slash, you know, I'm like a mesomorph type of body type on the slightly skinnier side.
Right, you're an ectomesomorph.
That's exactly what I am. I wasn't sure if I wanted to throw that word around, but since you did it first, I will. I'm an ectomesomorph.
you're an ectomeso in that terminology. And again, there's different terminologies for different different sciences and things like that. But you're an ectomesomorph in that terminology. And so an ectomesomorph, we know a lot about that overlay. And again, if we bring in a lot of those other sciences I mentioned before, plus a lot more, we get a really solid understanding of the tendencies for you and for each individual. So I can tell you a lot about yourself just by looking at you from that. And so as an ectomesomorph, and even more specifically when we did our Skype on video, I can see your facial features. I can see, you know, how tall your head is or how wide your cheekbones are, the shape of your jaw. All these sorts of things that give me understandings as to even, you know, the hormones that would be most dominant, from, you know, testosterone or dopamine and things like that. And then I can understand from the different neuroscience understandings that we have which brain regions are going to be most dominant for you. And so when we talked, I won't share too much information here on air, but you know, when we talked, you know, generally for an ectomorph, they're going to be more towards the frontal lobes of the brain where they're most dominant. Now, of course, everybody has activity in all the regions of their brain, but this is a very classic feature of a lot of ectomorphs, especially ectomesomorphs, where they're dominant in the prefrontal cortex, which is more based around logic and organization, analytics, planning processes, those sorts of things. And so,
and what would be the opposite of that lobe? What would be the lobe that would be associated with more like creativity, free thinking versus the logical, analytical?
Yeah, so you're looking at more of your parietal lobes or occipital lobes and things like that. So,
gotcha. Yeah. So what you could say then is that there's something to this idea of like the geeky cross country athlete, skinny nerd who's logical and analytical and grows up to be the mechanical engineer, versus like the mesomorphic or endomorphic football player who's perhaps more tuned into like emotions and and might perhaps grow up to be more of like, I don't know, a guy in sales.
Right, correct. And actually, there's a lot of correlations you can draw, and we talk a lot about that. And you know, people are more suited to different areas, different tasks, different natural talents, different jobs. And when you can understand that about yourself, you can really understand what's going to make you happy, and especially the link between happiness and health that we like to talk about. What's going to make you happy? What's going to make you healthy? If you are an accountant that's stuck in behind the desk and getting neck and back pain working in a dark cubicle, and you're supposed to be someone out being an artist or maybe being on the road doing sales, that's a very big change in health and your health status to be in that position for 20 years, which often most people are.
So walk me through how this funnel works. Is it A, determine your body type, and then B, determine your personality based on that body type, and then C, kind of start to choose what you do with your life based on that?
Yeah, it is a bit that way. Let me take it from the top for you here, because one of the questions you asked just at the start of the call was around about, you know, genetic testing and how that sort of fits in to determine things. And one of the biggest things that we've learned over time, we work with a lot of amazing geneticists and experts in genomics and a lot of companies, is that your genes don't determine your future. And so the genes and the code that you have, I won't use too many scientific explanations here, but your genotype is really all your DNA code. Mm-hmm. And that's fantastic, but your body has the choice as to which code it's going to switch on or express or activate. And so we talk about the phenotype, which is actually what how your genes look in action. And that's really what matters. And so the genotype is a pool or a code that exists, but your phenotype is what actually matters right now. It's you when you look in the mirror. You know, the color of your eyes, the color of your hair, the texture of your skin, the length of your fingers, mm-hmm. all this is determined by certain genes that are switched on or off. And so to understand the phenotype really gives us a good understanding as to who we are on the inside. And so not one of us on the planet are the same. We all have a different set of genes, different environments, different lifestyles. Even identical twins who do have the same genetic code all have different lifestyles and different environments and are different people and need different things. And so we've spent the last, a bit over 10 years developing this tool that we call PH360, which is Personal Health 360. And the aim of that is to help us measure or quantify the phenotype. And then we can, from the phenotype, we can understand all about these epigenetic fields. And epi meaning outside of the genes, or epi means outside. And so epigenetics means things outside of your genes that can actually determine which genes are activated and which genes are in action. So,
And what are you doing to actually determine the phenotype? Like if I go to your PH360ME website, what kind of variables go into determining one's phenotype? You know, and you know, for example, perhaps this would be a good way to illustrate. I've got two kids that are genotypically identical, River and Tara, and they're 7-year-old twins, but they have very different personalities. Taryn, who was born second, he's very right-brained. I guess you would maybe even say he's more of like this parietal lobe type of child who is very creative and free-thinking. River is more analytical, seems to be more frontal lobe. I mean, and technically they've got the same bodies, but phenotypically as far as like their expressions, their personalities, their creativity versus analytics, they're very different. So is this the type of thing that would phenotypically analyze them? And if so, what kind of things are you looking at?
Yeah. So that's a perfect example. It's great you've got one of these examples right at home in your lounge room, wherever they are at the moment. So it's a great example that you have very different, you know, two very different individuals living in your house. They do have a lot of differences in the environments and lifestyles that do create that and influence who they are. And so with PH360, we go through and we assess a lot of things like your genetic lineage, your ancestry. We assess your personal health history and your family history. But we also incorporate a lot of the sciences we spoke about. So we actually incorporate anthropometry. So we actually we get you to do a physical measurement of your body. Mm. You actually get a tape measure out and you measure the circumference of your head.
Yeah, I see that now. I've got your site pulled up, your step-by-step video guide to taking your measurements. So you would take your body type, your anthropometric measurements, but then you've also got a series of questionnaires.
Exactly, and that goes through and incorporates environment and lifestyle questions that we've tested. You know, again, we've designed and tested this over 10 years with tens of thousands of people to make sure that we have accuracy, that we can reverse engineer and know so much about the different genes you have switched on by knowing about who you are right now with your phenotype. And then we can have a very accurate conversation with you about the epigenetics based on all these different sciences that we overlay into the program. As I mentioned before, there's a few, but there's so many that we incorporate with, you know, the back end of molecular biology, biochemistry. We incorporate geomedicine, which is looking at the different locations and environment, how that can influence who you are. And again, we don't often think about that, but if you jumped on a plane right now and flew to Antarctica, you're going to be pretty cold and you're going to want to get off, get in your taxi, go straight to the hotel and have some warm soup. Right. If you jump off the plane in Africa, you're going to want to say, hey, everybody, how's it going? Ben's here. Nice to meet you all. Let's go get a fresh juice. In that situation, you're the same person, same genetic code. You're only a few hours later in time. but you need different foods. Your body knows that you need a warm soup in the cold versus a fresh juice in the warm. So our body's requirements actually change. Our different genes are expressed in a different way according to our environment.
Yeah, but do you need an app to tell you that? That, you know, when you walk into Africa, you need juice versus when you go to Antarctica, you need bone broth?
Well, you don't actually need an app if you're very in tune, and that's the key here for us, because our mission is so large. The people that are in tune, and maybe some of the guys in your audience for sure, that spend a lot of time and energy and effort on their body and probably, you know, tried everything under the sun, you know, a lot of trial and error to get to where you get to. And I'm sure that's been the case with you and many others.
You do have, however, a vacation planner tied to this app. And the way that you describe it here is it says plan vacations according to your body profile and circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
How did you actually determine that?
Well, that's based on all the information we get from the phenotype. There's not one data point, but we can understand a lot of different aspects about your organ health. We can understand a lot of different aspects about your hormones, about your immune system, when your immune system is at the lowest or the highest. We have integrations of chronobiology, which is really looking at the 24-hour light-dark cycle, the effect on cells and health. And so there's a lot of different correlations that go into understanding the time that your body actually needs to rejuvenate the most. It's a very powerful understanding, actually. And this will be where if you could be in your best environment, let's say you lived in Antarctica and you should be living in California, for example. If you could be in California when your body needs it the most, then that's the ideal time to get there. And so we can suggest things like, hey, if you're going to plan a vacation, why don't you go to California in January or February or whatever it's going to be for you.
Now, how would this be different than me going out and doing one of these salivary genetic tests, looking at my ancestry? You know, like for me, for example, I've got some Northern European, I've got some Jewish, and that's really it, Northern European and Jewish. So, you know, I could go look at that. I could go see the type of foods that my ancestors ate, the type of conditions that they lived in, right? Like, for the most part, you know, a place with four seasons, you know, the spring, summer, the winter, and the fall versus like a sub-Saharan climate, and then make my lifestyle choices accordingly. How is this app different than going out and doing something like via the salivary genetic route?
Yeah. So again, the salivary will give you about information about your genotype. So what your genotype gives you is just that broad base that may talk about a risk or a predisposition to something, but it doesn't actually give you any information about what's happening right now. That's the phenotype, and that's when your genes are in action, and that's what actually matters for you. You may have a whole heap of genes that are there that may indicate a risk for a disease that are never switched on that don't matter, or vice versa. And so the phenotype is really the thing that matters, and the power of your phenotype is that everything changes all the time. We're a very dynamic being, and as you change, then the things you should be eating change. Again, with your ancestors, where they lived, they came from Northern Europe. You're not in Northern Europe. You're actually in California. I can't remember where you're actually. You're somewhere in America in the middle.
Yeah, Washington State.
Washington, there you go. And so you are not in the right environment. So if you ate what your ancestors ate, that wouldn't be relevant, because where they were was suitable for them in their climate. You're in a different climate now.
Okay, so is what you're referring to then the field of epigenetics? Like we have these genes, but then based on where we're living, certain triggers on those genes are pulled to turn them on or off?
Exactly, yeah. So environment is one epigenetic factor that we discuss. And that is the environment has the ability to influence which genes are expressed, hence influences your health status and the different foods you eat or different exercise you do, the different way your brain chemistry works. Even the example I gave before where you jump off the plane in Antarctica versus in Africa, if you think back to what I said before, it's about even your brain chemistry, your neurochemistry changes. You got off the plane in Antarctica, you just wanted to get in a cab and go straight to your hotel. You didn't want to talk to anyone. You didn't want to do anything. It's just get me there, get me some soup. I want to get warm. In Africa, you jumped off the plane and you're like, hey, everybody, it's Ben here. I just met five new friends in the first 3 minutes. So even the way your brain chemistry works, you're an open, sociable person in warm weather. You're a closed, more introverted person in colder weather. So it's just one of those things that we don't often consider. But even our neurochemistry changes as our food changes and our requirements change in just a different environmental stimulus, which is pretty powerful when you can realize that and harness that.
Okay, so it seems to me like if there are so many things, from the foods that we eat to the condition of our hair and our skin to where we live to when we've traveled to these body shape measurements, if there's so many things that would influence our day-to-day choices as far as, are we going to travel? Are we going to sleep in? What are we going to eat? it seems like you could just spend all day long quantifying data and entering data into, well, for this PH360, I know it's an app that you guys use. How do you find the balance between just like constantly plugging data in versus somehow automating the process?
We encourage everybody to update their information every 2 to 4 weeks. And so when you put your information in there, and again, where you talked about, you could chase your genetic lineage, you can try and find out where they lived, and you can go through a lot of different hassles and a lot of different areas to try and research this, and then it would still be different for you based on your circumstances. We now have this available for within half an hour, or I think it's about, you know, just over 30 minutes on average. You can know all this information that's right for you, and it's very, very specific. So it'll be able to tell you if tomatoes are good for you to eat, or if Brussels sprouts are good for you to eat, all these considered healthy foods. But it's a half an hour assessment that you can do, and then you update that every couple of weeks, which will give you an accurate representation. And generally speaking, it depends on how often or how much you have to change in your body as to how often we'll get people to update. And so we do a lot of international research on that with clinical trials and things to make sure that we're as accurate as possible. But we notice that people change within a couple of days. You can even change your gene expression within 20 minutes doing an exercise bike session. So it's we're changing rapidly. But where we sit at the moment, we encourage people to do it every 2 to 4 weeks, just because it's not practical to do it every half an hour. And the changes that you'll see and show up in your body can take a couple of days to a couple of weeks to be evident for most people. And so we've got a good balance between what's practically acceptable and what is the ideal for your health. And so we do have a lot of incorporations with future technologies, like the wearable technologies that are coming, where you won't even need to enter any data yourself. It'll pull it out of your Apple Watch. It'll pull it out of your Fitbit. And actually talk to that system itself, so you can just go about your daily life and have your health at your fingertips without thinking about it.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. So I do have some other questions that I want to ask you, but I actually didn't know a whole lot about how you were pulling this off from a technological standpoint until the discussion that we just had. So because I know people are going to want to know about this anyways, like what's the cost to do something like this? Like, do you just download an app and pay a fee, or how does it work?
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's interesting because if you remember when the Human Genome Project started, it was millions of dollars to get your genome sequenced. It was kind of a similar sort of thing. It wasn't that expensive as millions of dollars, but it was tens of thousands of dollars when we first started out to be able to manage someone's personalized health. We've worked really, really hard because our intentions is to have this available for literally almost everybody on the planet. We've worked really hard to be able to get that down at this point in time to have this available for $197 for a year. Which is just over the cost of seeing one specialist usually, or a medical professional. This is all the information that's cutting edge, that's specific to you, unlimited updates. If you travel interstate or overseas, you update it.
So if I'm paying you $197 for a year, what I'm getting access to is this app that I'm then updating with my information, and the app is telling me the type of nutrition, the type of exercise, the days that I should sleep in, the times of the year that I should travel, et cetera?
Yeah, it'll even give you information about social circumstances, the people that are most likely to keep you smiling and happy, and the people you're most likely to feel a bit drained around. It'll even give you...
Really? How does that work?
So this is the insights we can get from a lot of the melding of these different sciences and understanding. From when you've completed your assessment, we understand all about your phenotype, which means we know which hormones you're most dominant in. We understand which neurotransmitters are most active for you at different times of day. We understand all these sorts of things about you, and we can be very accurate in correlating that with your behaviors, your thoughts, your emotions. It's very, very powerful, and of course, risks of disease. And so we're able to tell you specifically about the sort of natural talents that you have, or things that you'll be enjoying doing, spending your time doing, versus those, that example of the accountant versus the artist. What are you most suited to? What are you going to find enjoyable? And most importantly, what's going to get you in your flow state? What's going to have you, resonating at the right frequency, activating the most dominant regions of your brain so that you're feeling really engaged? And that's something that is really, really important, and that causes, or the opposite of that actually contributes a lot and significant to the amount of stress that we have at work or with bosses, and even understanding social relationships and other people so that you can relate to your bosses or your coworkers in a different way, or your family members or your friends. It really is powerful. We're having some pretty large conversations with this at the moment. I'm over here in the US. We've just been over advising with the US Army, recently addressed United Nations about personalized health, and I just did a TED talk in LA on these exact same concepts. So there's a lot of interest around about personalized health and epigenetics.
Is there research behind that kind of stuff though? Like based on your phenotype, what kind of people are going to drain you versus what kind of people are going to energize you? Or is this just all kind of like blue sky thinking?
No, there's a lot of research. Everything in PhD60 is evidence-based. So it's the first time we've been able to put it into a format that's accessible. And of course, our intentions are to be able to do this in a way that people can access very, very easily. And one of our most difficult things was to say, how can we get this information into a way that people can access this from the comfort of their own home without needing to even see a professional? And that was quite a difficult thing for us to get to, but we've got there, and that's what PhD60 is. You know, from the comfort of your own home within just over 30 minutes, you can find out what's right for you. And that really is our message, is find out what's right for you. You could spend years and years of trial and error to get to the same point, but why don't you just spend 30 minutes to know what's right for you? Because there's so much confusion out there, as you know. Do you do the juice fast? Do you drink the bone broth? Do you do the paleo diet? You know, do you eat the high protein, low protein, no protein, high carb, low carb, no carb?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, how do you know? We're trying to save a lot of time and a lot of hassle, a lot of ill health and disease, from just saying, you know what, if you went and did the paleo diet, you're actually going to be in a pretty bad way. But if you did the paleo diet and all these people did it, you'd probably, you know, you potentially could cure your cancer.
Okay, so I actually have a question about that, Matt.
Yeah.
I've got some friends who just kill it on a vegan diet. You know, there's guys like, let's say Rich Roll, right? Perfect example. Awesome guy, goes out, does ultra endurance events, seems to have full cognitive capacity and just absolutely thrives on like a vegan plant-based diet. I've done vegan/raw food diet for 6 months and felt horrible and done it the right way, right? Like the chia seeds and fermenting and sprouting and soaking, and experienced a significant loss of muscle and lack of sexual motivation and all these things that to me, you know, gave me the impression that it just was not working for me. How does this actually work in terms of what's going on from a genetic standpoint? I'm okay if you get geeky with this, you know, and delve into, you know, whatever's involved here. But can you explain why that is? What's going on chemically?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're open to it, I can use you as that, your example of or your situation as an example there.
Yeah, sure.
And so again, we talked about you initially at the start of the call being more of an ectomesomorph. So naturally we understand the processes in your body, they're going to be deficient, or you're going to be prone to deficiencies in the process of the body. And so for you, you're naturally going to be lower in digestive enzymes than what other people are going to be. And so from that particular point, if you're having a lot of raw food, and if you're especially for raw food, you're going to find it very, very hard to digest. You're not going to get the same release of hydrochloric acid to break down. You're not going to get the same enzymes that are there in the, you know, that are released from the pancreas, especially to be able to break down the foods, which means that you're going to end up with, you know, you may have indigestion, you may have bloating, you will have malabsorption, you will lose muscle mass, you won't be able to absorb that protein and digest it and use it as other bodies will. And so in that case specifically, if you were going to do, you know, that specific diet, A, we'd advise you against it in PhD60 to say, and you'll actually see a method for prepared foods. Raw food would be very low on your suggestions, because we understand already that you doing a diet, you're going to struggle with it. And this is, you know, where you did it for 6 months or 8 months. This just saves you the hassle to say, hey, you know what, don't bother with this, because it's not going to work for you. If you were going to have the same veggies, you need to have them very well cooked. And if you have well-cooked veggies, not just a quick stir fry, but if you have well-cooked veggies, your body will digest that very, very well and very, very easily. And so a cooked food is better than raw food for you. Just straight away, I can tell you that straight off the bat. Then again, even going down to the next step, the protein is something to, you know, your protein digestion, you need to be very, very mindful of that. So if you are going to eat a lot of protein, you need to make sure you've got enough digestive enzymes available. So you may need to do things, you know, have things like pineapples or papaya, other foods that have high digestive enzymes naturally around those foods. So if you had a, you know, big fat steak every single meal, you're going to need to have a lot of those other digestive enzymes present to be able to help you. Otherwise, you're going to end up in strife. Mm. And so just understanding that about you before you even get going just can save so much time and hassle. And again, for you, you're obviously very health conscious. You're very in tune with your body. You'll probably try things from the scientific nature of interesting to find out, you know, on the constant search for the Holy Grail. But for most people in the world, they have no idea. They'll follow a paleo if someone's speaking loudly in the media about paleo. They'll follow a raw food if someone's speaking loudly about raw food. And it actually leads to a lot of health and disease issues for a lot of people. And we're out here to try and sort of, you know, ease the confusion and just say, hey, you can now find out what's right for you.
I have a question for you related to this whole like veganism versus carnivore thing with relation to methylation. And, you know, I don't know how much you've incorporated like over methylation versus under methylation signs in this pH360 app. But my understanding is that meat has a high amount of methionine in it, and that's a good donor of methyl. But some people are over methylators, and an over methylator actually doesn't necessarily need a ton of methyl and actually feels kind of crappy with a bunch of methyl floating around. And so for those type of over methylators, they actually feel okay on more of a plant-based diet. Whereas like an under-methylator who's having a difficult time actually getting enough methyl in their system, they need a bit of extra protein. They need to be a little bit more of a carnivore and maybe even be a really paleo carnivore versus like a regular methylator who does well on like a mostly omnivorous diet. Is that a concept you're familiar with at all, or that you've brought into this pH360 app at all?
Yeah, 100%. In fact, exactly what you just described there is what I said, just in different words.
Okay.
which is great. And I try not to get too geeky in these sort of forums. I do spend a lot of time teaching science and medical professionals, but
it's okay. We have smart listeners. They can take it.
I'm sure. So, in terms of the concept of methylation, it's the same concept. You're just looking at it and describing it in a different way. But the underpinning principle that you describe is very, very accurate, and it's personalized. It's different for everybody, and that's really the key here. And the key message is that, you know, if you're and just so that you're aware, you're more prone to methylation than what other people are. And so this is where, you know, if you're eating too much meat, if you had your big steaks every meal, you're going to struggle. But that that all fits in perfectly in sync with what, you know, we talk about with the fact that you have low digestive enzymes, and so you can't break down the protein, you can't get rid of the protein anywhere near as much, you can't absorb the amount of protein of what other people will. And so generally, you'll find, you know, even all the overlays that match, you talk about, you know, you being an ectomesomorph, you're going to get away with a plant-based diet as long as it's well-cooked foods. You can also get away with some animal protein because you're towards more of the mesomorph side of things. Mesomorphs need animal protein. A lot of the, you know, the medical issues, and again, this is nothing personal and everything specific here. I don't want to generalize too much, but generally speaking, a general tendency, a mesomorph will need animal proteins. Often we'll see a lot of people who are in a sick state or a state of ill health, if they're a vegetarian on a vegetarian diet and they're a mesomorph because their body actually needs animal proteins, versus on the other side for an endomorph, they could go for days and days and days. In fact, they could go for days fasting comfortably without even eating any food, but they are very suited to a vegetarian diet and they don't need a lot of meat. Coming around through the ectomorph, if they have too much meat, they're going to be in strife. In fact, an ectomorph can function off of, you know, most days they can function off bird seed. They don't even need a lot of food.
Yeah, that sounds like my wife.
Yeah, right. And that
sounds like her whole family, actually. She comes from this hard Montana rancher family, and, you know, her dad was like 90 pounds in high school, and, you know, my wife is like this thin but like super strong, like ex track and field athlete, and literally like she can go the whole day eating flaxseed and romaine lettuce and then go do a CrossFit workout. And,
you know, exactly, it's not fair, but coming around to you, you would be, for the ectomesomorph, if you didn't eat for the day, you could actually do that as well, except the reason why you would be able to do that would be if you were very focused and committed on something. So you would sacrifice, like if you, say, had a big project that's due at, you know, at midnight tonight, you may forego eating for the day to sacrifice a result because you'll be very driven by getting that done. And so it's possible for you to go without eating for the day, but for a different response. You could, your mind would actually overpower the need for eating. If you had some deadline, it was so important for you, you would prioritize that. Whereas for her, she doesn't actually need the food. So it's, again, we're all sort of different in different situations. It's quite fascinating.
And a big part of what you were talking about earlier, Matt, was epigenetics, how our genes can you know, or the triggers that activate certain genes can change based on the situations in which we've placed ourselves. How flexible are our bodies, though? Like, You can't necessarily change your ability to methylate, for example, can you?
No. So you have everybody has a tendency, if you like, and there's depending on your body, you have a set tendency that's there that does fluctuate, but it doesn't fluctuate significantly. Like for you, for example, if you're an ectomesomorph, you're never going to be a 300-pound overweight guy walking down the streets. If you ate McDonald's every single meal for the rest of your life, you're never going to be that guy. You might get a bit of fat around and your gut and things like that, but you're never going to be this really big obese guy just because you don't have the capacity for that. And the same sort of thing, the big obese person that's walking around the street now is never going to be the supermodel thin person. It's just not in their body and they don't have the capacity to change that much. We are who we are. However, we can fluctuate a significant amount within that structure. And most importantly, when you come into a place of full health with your cells at the cellular level, then everything comes back to your natural weight. And so the concept of your natural weight that's right for you is one of the big conversations in society right now, that if you want to be the supermodel thin person, well, actually maybe your body's natural weight isn't supposed to be that and vice versa. Mm. And so it's really important to understand, we're all so different and we can fluctuate to some extent, but will always be a tendency. And if you know that and can understand that and can harness that, then you can act accordingly. Like again, for example, if you ate big steaks every single meal for breakfast, lunch and dinner, you'd be in strife. Whereas if it was a mesomorph, they'd be more likely to get away with that and function very highly from that. So if that was the case and you understood that, you can change that and adapt accordingly. And you can help reduce your methylation and help reduce things like maybe anything neurological, which would be, you would be more predisposed to neurological type things in the future if you weren't in a good state of health.
So I've taken my genetic data from salivary genetic testing and I've exported it into DNA Fit. And I've actually interviewed the folks from DNA Fit in a podcast. I'll put it in the show notes to this podcast. And by the way, the show notes for this podcast, if you want to go and click on some of the links and some of the resources Matt and I are talking about, can be found at bengreenfieldfitness.com/epigenetics. Good luck spelling that one. It's not that hard. EPI genetics. bengreenfieldfitness.com/epigenetics. But anyways, when I've exported that data, Matt, it's shown me that I am, for example, an athlete who is very, very good at power and kind of sort of okay at endurance. But I thrive at endurance sports. And frankly, I even grew up as a pretty good tennis player and did bodybuilding. And so I did okay in power sports too, but it's almost like I've changed my body to a certain extent to be good at endurance. I know other guys, Kelly Starrett is a perfect example. And he was talking to me about this a couple of weeks ago at a conference, how, he's a guy who squats 600 pounds and is really, he looks like a power and strength specimen, but he actually is more of a, like an endurance responder or genetically adapted to be better at endurance. Can you explain how much of this is flexible based off of your epigenetics, and B, how you're using something like PH360 to help people make the correct exercise choices?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess firstly, I just want to say we work with a lot of amazing genomic companies and geneticists internationally, and the field of genomics is still very, very new, and there's still a lot of accuracy that needs to be improved in the area of genomics. And so even the best geneticist in the world is Professor Sir John Byrne. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he looks after the personal genome for the Queen, for example.
What's this guy's name? I should look him up.
Professor Sir John Byrne. I just interviewed him a few weeks ago.
How do you spell that last name?
B-U-R-N.
Okay, cool. I'll look him up.
And he's doing some amazing research in the fields, and he's an international leader in genetics. He'll get up in front of a room and say, "Hey, we've been doing this genome thing since 1989 when the Human Genome Project started, and we know lots of things. But you know what? We have no real idea what's going on. We've got so much to learn, and we're not really sure where we're at. Now, these are the best guys in the world that will stand up in front of a lecture series and say this. So it's very commonly accepted that there's so much that we don't know about genetics. And there's a lot of companies, there's actually quite a lot now, a lot of companies that are out there trying to create a good business model to say, hey, let's try and read and interpret your genes and an outcome. The limitations with that is because your genes aren't that relevant. It depends which genes are activated. And that's really the key here, is that which genes are actually activated for you right now will determine who you are right now. The genes that are there actually may not be relevant at all if they're not switched on. If you go down to the molecular biology level, you look at these little epigenetic marks that sit around the chromatin structures, and each different specific bundle of DNA that's wrapped around with protein can be made accessible or inaccessible for the cell to actually read the gene. That's all determined by these epigenetic marks. So in epigenetics, trigger will determine whether a gene actually gets read or not by the cell. And so if it closes up that chromatin structure, the gene won't get read, it won't get expressed, and it's not relevant for you right now. If it opens up, it is. And so even though you might know about all your genes that sit there, it's actually irrelevant, because what is relevant is which ones are activated right now for you.
Is it really not relevant at all, though? Like
it's definitely relevant.
If my genetics say that I would technically, you know, I'm like, whatever, 90% range on the power, and I'm in like the 70s or something like that on endurance. If I had made the decision when I was a kid, you know, and let's say I had a clone, right? And one made the decision to just like go hardcore into like powerlifting and high jumping and tennis, you know, all these power-based explosive sports. And the other had made the decision to just go hardcore into like Ironman and endurance and long distance running. Like, would the power person be more successful because they had actually chosen a sport that was both aligned with their genotype and then also, you know, what the environment in which they immerse themselves or their phenotype?
Yeah. So the short answer is yes. If you were an identical twin and your twin chose that path and you chose your path, then yes, he would be better at that and you would be better at what you do. So that's the power of the phenotype, is it'll adapt to your environment, it'll adapt to the load that you put under things. It'll adapt. You literally express different genes to what your identical twin will express. Even though you've got the same genetic code, he'll be expressing different genes and you'll be expressing different genes, which means you're better at power and he's better at endurance, or whichever the way that round was. And so understanding the phenotype means that you understand who you are right now and who he is right now. You both have the potential, again, the genetic predisposition or the risk or the potential to achieve these things, but he decided to express his genes and focus on that, and you decide to express your genes and focus on that. And so that really is the power here, and understanding that the genotype is limited in those fields, it can give you an understanding as to what you might be good at. And again, you may have got back that you might be good at certain things, but you haven't found that to be the case. If you went and decided to train in that, then maybe you do get a result, maybe you don't. And again, you know, some of the things that you want to make sure that is accurate. But for you, even if you go back to the example of you being a mesoectomorph, without even going into your genetic code, you know, we already know what sort of, and you, I'm sure you're quite aware of this too, that you know, what sort of training modalities, what sort of exercises are most suited to these sorts of body types, even just with body type alone, that's far more accurate, because it depends on who you are. You can change and vary within certain situations. Yeah. But someone like you talk about with an ectomeso, you're going to be, like an ectomorph is going to be very strong on the endurance. That's a, like a better suited exercise for them. A mesomorph is going to be ectomorph is going to be endurance and strength endurance type things, more the ballistic power and moving towards the ectomeso. Mesomorph, more strength and mobility, dynamic movements and things like that. And so you're kind of in between those. You're going to have, you know, good strength endurance, but the power you'll have will be more like ballistic power. You'll be great with agility, great with reaction times, a lot explosive power for you. You won't be like the endomorph that has heavy power, the big weightlifters, the huge guys with big bone structures, big muscle mass, big fat mass. You're never going to be that person. These guys are going to have power, like they're going to be able to convert a whole different sort of power to what your power is going to be. So,
It makes perfect sense. It's also interesting that like my endurance progresses best when I'm using high intensity interval training with the focus on power. So it's almost like I can use that genetic predisposition to be better at power to actually build my endurance more quickly. Now with something like the PH360.me, is that asking me via a series of questionnaires about my body type and then just spitting out an exercise plan based on what it kind of anticipates me to be best at, from power to endurance, et cetera? Or is it changing it up throughout the year based off where I've been and what I've been doing?
Exactly. So it's very dynamic, and that's the key here, is that there's a whole heap of so it'll get some information from you based on your body type. So that's like one filter. Think of it as one filter that we incorporate. We understand, you know, when you measure your body, you understand your body type, and that's a filter that goes into there. So we already know, you know, again, there's a filter there saying you're going to be best suited to these sorts of exercises. But we'll ask you about your goals. What are your goals? Do you want to gain muscle mass? Do you want to, you know, lose fat? Do you, you know, what are your goals through there? So we'll understand, and we'll be able to, you know, direct you in a better direction as to what your training will be. But it's based on your gene expression. It's based on which genes are switched on and off for you. And so you'll be presented with exercises depending on what you want to do. There's a lot of choice in there. So you can choose a strength workout or you can choose a cardio workout, for example. If you choose a strength workout, you get to choose the intensity or the, you know, if you're a beginner or an advanced athlete, how long you're working out for. If you're wanting to do an upper body or a lower body session or a full body session, and you can click on a button that says create my personalized workout. And what that will do is it will filter through all the different information based on your phenotype, even considers things like your mind and if you're going to be focused on doing that. It considers your risks of disease and issues. It may consider the fact that you may be less mobile through your upper thoracic and cervical region. You're going to be more prone to probably having some neck pain and stiffness and tightness. So it'll incorporate, you know, things if, let's say it was going to say, oh, you know, it's identified in the back end that Ben needs to work, you know, the muscles between the shoulder blades, for example. And so instead of giving you a seated row, it may give you a one arm, you know, single arm dumbbell snatch, or it might give you a cable extension with a single arm to make sure that it incorporates both the strength aspect that you need, but also the mobility that you need through that region as well for your nerves, for your vascular system, because that's going to reduce pain and issues with chronic you know, nerve problems down the track for you. So it's based on, it's very much specific to you, and it's based on 100% health, not just what we think is the standard strength and conditioning. So it's very powerful. But if you go and do that for an exercise, click create my workout, it'll list up an exercise. If you go through and change any of those settings, it'll change for you. If you, again, update your measurements in 4 weeks and do it, you'll have different workouts that are there. And there's a lot of flexibility. You can change workouts within the program and refresh exercises, but it'll only present you with the exercises that are right for you. Very, very different to how we actually approach exercise these days from a strength and conditioning background. And I spent many, many years consulting strength and conditioning for that. So.
What about if you have an event? Like a lot of our listeners are going to go do like a triathlon or a Spartan or something like that. Like, can you put an event on your calendar so that it takes into account the fact that maybe you shouldn't be as beat up at this point in the year or something like that?
Not at this stage, but we are developing quite a lot. And what PH360 will currently tell you is the best thing for your health and for your body right now. And so in the field of elite sports, there's always different decisions we make. You know, if we're, you know, if it's an elite sportsman competing in a grand final and they tear a muscle, they'll do what they need to do to get back on the field and play, even though it's not the best thing for their health. If we're training, if you're doing martial arts, you'll go for a period of time, you know, a number of days without consuming food and things leading up to your event, which is completely opposite to what your body needs. You need the fuel, you need things to be able to perform better, but we'll go to get our weight and won't eat for a couple of days, and we'll, you know, reduce all our body water content to try and make sure we get in our lower weight class. So there's always in the elite sports things that we do that aren't good for our health. What PH360 will tell you is what's best for your health. And so you then have the power to adapt your training regime around that, but you'll always know what's best. So that's where it currently sits at the moment.
This is pretty cool. I actually do want to go try this out. And is it iPhone or Android?
Yeah, you can use it on anything. It's a web-based app. You can use it on anything.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to go check this out and input my data and see what, play around with it. Because it actually looks really, really interesting. I mean, this whole like vacation planner thing and what kind of people drain you and what kind of people energize you. Super duper interesting. I could probably pick your brain for a lot longer than this, but I know we're coming up on time. So what I've done is I've taken some notes as we've been recording here. And if you're listening in, just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/epigenetics if you want to go check out the PH360 app, the book that I wrote that sounds like it's just like super duper basic compared to what this thing is doing. But I'll put a link to that book I wrote a while ago. Yeah, it's a good start to understand. The previous podcast that I did with the folks from DNA Fit, I'll try and hunt down some information about this John Byrne guy and put as many resources as possible in there for you. Anything else that I should include here, Matt, that you'd recommend people check out?
I think, well, ph360.me, of course, is where you can find this out for yourself. And that's really, you know, our intentions are to make sure that people are aware that you can actually now understand what's right for you, especially, you know, a huge thing in most of the population is foods at the moment, and exercise, of course, probably in your demographics, Ben. So it's it really gives an insight as to a lot of the foods, a lot of the confusion out there. And can help you save a lot of many years and much ill health, which is our intentions, obviously, for looking at eliminating disease entirely in the next 35 years. So we're working on some pretty big plans and pretty big projects, and we're really excited to have PH360 as this tool that can help people understand what's right for them right now. And watch this space, because we're pushing into some exciting developments at the moment. So yeah, it's really cool. So thank you so much for your time.
I love this stuff. I'm gonna live to be 300 years old. I know it's,
I'll see you there.
All right, cool. Well, folks, again, bengreenfieldfitness.com/epigenetics. It's EPI genetics if you want to check it all out. And until next time, thanks for listening. And thank you, Matt, for coming on the show.
Awesome, Ben. Thanks so much. Great to be here and share this with you. So thanks so much for your time.
All right, folks, have a healthy week.
Visit BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.